On this episode of Inside Boxing Live, Rob Tebbit joins the show as we take a look back at Gervonta Davis's six-round knockout of Rolly Romero, take a look ahead at what's realistic for Tank Davis. We also break down the George Kambosos-Devin Haney fight, the Stephen Fulton versus Danny Roman fight, and Anthony Joshua has a new trainer. Will it make a difference? All that and more coming up next. What is up, my friends? Welcome into another edition of Inside Boxing Live, presented by John Boyd Media. I am your host, Dan Canobio. A fun one planned for you today as Rob Tebbit joins the show, longtime boxing journalist, pound for pound, one of the best boxing follows on Twitter, for a fun interview where we're going to break down what we saw this past weekend, Gervonta Davis. We're going to talk about the upcoming weekend. It's a huge weekend. It's a huge stretch. For boxing, we're going to see Devin Haney and George Kambosos finally tangle. Finally, we get an answer to this undisputed situation at lightweight. Whether it was going back to Teofimo and Lomachenko in the franchise belt, whether Lomachenko was going to hop in and take this fight instead of Devin Haney, that is all gone now. And we're getting closer and closer to a mega fight on regular ESPN, not a pay-per-view. We're going to see Devin Haney, George Kambosos settle this at lightweight. Some fun scenes coming out of Australia. It seems like George Kambosos is trying his hardest to get under the skin of Devin Haney. He's, you know, some funny scenes, whether it's Haney calling out Kambosos for being rehearsed, whether it's Kambosos calling Devin Haney a rat and an informant, because apparently during the lead up to the Kambosos-Teofimo fight, Haney was DMing Kambosos, giving him information on Teofimo Lopez. But then when George Kambosos goes and tells everyone that, wouldn't that make him a snitch by default? So a lot of that's going on, the tactical warfare, mental warfare. That's what George Kambosos does. But I think it's going to be a really good fight. I'll have my picks coming up in a little bit. But that is the biggest fight of the weekend. Over on Showtime, we're going to see Stephen Fulton, a fast-rising fighter at 122 pounds, one of the best divisions in boxing. He's taking on Danny Roman. Danny Roman, former unified champion, lost a razor-thin decision to MK Akhmadaliyev a few years back, but he's got himself back in title contention. Could be last stand for Danny Roman, but Fulton is a stud. A guy that, you know, did it the hard way, you know, beating Angelo Leo a few years back, you know, changing up his entire offensive game plan. Talk about this with Rob. You know, Fulton was a guy that was throwing about 50 punches around, you know, modest pace for that weight class. But over his last two fights, you know, he's a guy averaging over 100 punches thrown per round. So those are the big fights this weekend. Kambosos, Haney, Fulton, Roman. We just saw some huge ones, huge fight this past weekend. Whoever you look at it, Tank Davis is a star, and we'll talk about that and more with Robbie Tebbit. Some news and notes. Big headline that just came through is Robert Garcia is going to be training Anthony Joshua for the rematch with Alexander Usyk. That rematch being pushed back. Would be an Anthony Joshua fight if it didn't have some delays, if it didn't have some site fee headlines. It's apparently going to be in Saudi Arabia. I don't think fans care too much about that type of stuff. They just want to see this rematch. They want to see more movement in the heavyweight division. But Robert Garcia was a name that we did not see coming. At least I didn't see coming in terms of being Anthony Joshua's trainer. You know, there was names being thrown around. Maybe a Joe Goosen, maybe an Eddie Reynoso. I know that Anthony Joshua went on this U.S. tour of going to different gyms. Ultimately settles on Robert Garcia. I don't remember Robert Garcia ever training a heavyweight, but it's going to be tough. You know, with 8 weeks to go or nine, whatever it is to go until that fight in late August, getting Anthony Joshua to become less of a jab first fighter. Anthony Joshua, close to 70% was throwing punches or jabs, maybe blending that offense, maybe getting back to fighting on the inside. That's something Garcia teaches a lot of his fighters, is aggressive fighting in the clinch. That's something that Joshua needed in that first fight with Usyk, a little more of. I thought that when he went to the body, he had success. Joshua seemed to go to the body more in this one. Is it enough time to gel with a new trainer? That remains to be seen. But that rematch is moving forward for late summer. Ryan Garcia is back in the news, as always, facing Javier Fortuna July 16th at Crypto.com Arena, formerly Staples Center. It's always going to be the Staples Center to me. But Ryan Garcia back in the ring. And, you know, is this fight great? No. Is this fight terrible? No. Is it somewhere in the middle? Yes. But the most important thing for Ryan Garcia is getting back into a regular training and fight schedule. Guy missed a lot of time, lost all momentum after that knockout over Luke Campbell. And he got back into the ring against Togo, went 12 rounds for the first time in his career, knocked him down, fought a guy that did not want to engage. I expect this to be a little bit of a step up from the Togo fight. Javier Fortuna, let's not forget, was the fight that Ryan was supposed to have last spring. Then he pulled out with the mental health issues. But this fight lost its luster a little bit because Fortuna lost to Jojo Diaz. But I expect Ryan Garcia to beat Javier Fortuna. Then I expect him to fight Jojo Diaz sometime in December. Do I think he's going to get tank in December? No, there's a big push right now for that tank fight. Talk about that in depth with Rob Tebbit. But if Ryan Garcia can fight three times in 2022, if he can get a Togo win, a Fortuna win, and a Jojo Diaz win, that's momentum. That's good. Getting this guy in the ring is good. So we'll see what happens on July 16th in L.A. I'm trying to make it out to that fight. WBO orders Jermell Charlo and Tim Tszyu for a fight at 154 pounds. I like this fight. I think that Jermell Charlo should take this fight. I think if you take a look around at the picture at 160, it's pretty barren right now. You got Golovkin moving up to fight Canelo. You got Demetrius Andrade in limbo. Is he going to stay at 160 and fight Janibek, or is he going to give up his belt? He's talking about going up to 168. He's got his brother, Jermell Charlo, at 160. They're not going to fight each other. Of course not. So there could be some vacancies at 160. Maybe Jermell Charlo can jump in there and fight for a vacant belt. But he's 31, 32 years old. You know, if he wants to keep this train rolling, he has a potential to completely clear out the 154 division by beating Tim Tszyu and Sebastian Fundora. I think they're winnable fights for Charlo. I think the Tszyu fight is a very winnable fight for Jermell Charlo. Tszyu, as we saw, went down in his last fight, and it was not against a puncher in Terrell Gauthier. I can see Charlo winning via knockout over Tim Tszyu. Fundora fight, a little more tricky, but another one where Charlo's experience, his ring IQ, his power, his timing, he has a chance to be really special, cement his legacy, as if, you know, he doesn't exactly have to do that at 154 because he already has as the undisputed champ. But if he went on there and beat Tszyu and Fundora coming off of the run he's had at 154, that would be interesting. But the WBO has ordered that. So either Charlo takes that fight with Tszyu or he vacates at 154, goes up to 160 and tries to rule there too. That would be an interesting fight too. Another thing to keep in mind too with Charlo, if he takes this Tszyu fight, you have a fight with Terrence Crawford. I mean, we're looking really far ahead. Terrence Crawford, first, the fight between him and Spence has to be made. Then he has to win that fight. But that's something that maybe Charlo is in the back of his mind, a fight with Crawford, but goes more to my point of Charlo taking big fights. And the biggest fights for him remain at 154. Speaking of Spence and Crawford, that is close to done, according to some reports. They're just working on a date. There is a argument on the Twitter sphere right now raging on what is the bigger pay-per-view, whether it's Canelo, Triple G, or is it Spence and Crawford. I don't understand why we have to debate these things. I understand that the nature of boxing is debates, is subjectivity, but Canelo's not moving off of that September 17th fight with Golovkin. It's already set. So now Showtime, if you watched last week's episode or listened to last week's episode, you saw Steven Espinosa on, and it's going to be a Showtime fight. It's coming up with a date. Do they do it sometime in October? Do they do it sometime in November? That is my guess for Spence and Crawford. Apparently all the paperwork is done. You know, all the deal is done, but we're just trying to find a date for that. But that's music to boxing fans' ears. All right, let's get to our DraftKings gambling segment here on the show. Of course, we have partnered with DraftKings, and MLB season is in full swing. Official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. New customers can bet just $5 on any team and win and get $150 in free bets no matter win or lose. I'm a big Yankee fan. Here in New York, the Yankees are playing well. The Mets are playing well. Baseball is in full swing. When the Stanley Cup Finals end, when the NBA Finals end, it's going to be all things go. All things go. Is that even a thing? I don't think so. For Major League Baseball, if you're looking to make a small bet and turn it into a big payday this MLB offseason, DraftKings same game parlays. You can do just that. I have my own same game parlay on the app. Create your own parlay by combining multiple bets, like which team will win, how many bases will be stolen, total runs, and more for your shot at a bigger payout. Parlays are fun. Gambling is fun. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code JOHNBOY. Bet just $5 and get $150 in free bets no matter what happens on the field. That's promo code JOHNBOY at DraftKings Sportsbook, official sports betting partner of Major League Baseball. All right, it's time to get our picks this week. Same game parlay brought to you by DraftKings. I've partnered with DraftKings. You're going to see this on the app on Saturday. And first off, let's get this one out of the way. I got Kenechi Ogawa. He is a plus 140 underdog against Joe Cardina this weekend over on DAZN. This is for the IBF junior lightweight title that belongs to Ogawa. Cardina, highly skilled Welsh boxer. This is going to be a banger. This is over on DAZN. This weekend is going to be awesome. But I'm going to go with Ogawa to get the job done and win. He's a plus 140 underdog, so you get some value there. Now, to the main event of the weekend, George Kambosos and Devin Haney. I'm taking George Kambosos plus 140 underdog in his own home country and his own home arena. You know, I think he gets it done. I think he is going in with an advantage of the fight being in Australia. On top of that, I just think he has a little more offensively down the stretch to take over the fight against Devin Haney. Like, I think Haney is going to come out with a good jab, good defense in the first, you know, four or five rounds. What's going to happen in the second half of the fight? Can Devin Haney win rounds demonstratively? Can he win rounds clearly? Not known as an offensive dynamo. Doesn't do one thing great. Does a lot of things good, Devin Haney, in my opinion. Kambosos has that firepower. Will have that edge with the Australia behind him. Very accurate puncher, more active puncher. 61 punches thrown per round. With that, if you want some value, home cooking maybe, I'm going George Kambosos plus 140. So I got Kambosos and I got Ogawa this weekend as my same game parlay. You can check it out over at DraftKings Sportsbook on the app. And there it is, my picks for this week. Let's bring in Joe's McFly, our resident Joe's Goes. You probably know him from Twitch. You probably know him from Yankee Twitter. You probably know him from Rangers Twitter. And now you're getting to know him from Boxing Twitter. Joe's, welcome to Inside Boxing Live. It is an honor.
Thank you for having me. So, box aficionado myself.
The reason Joe's is here is because Showtime sent Joe's to the Javonta Davis, Rolly Romero fight this past Saturday night. I want to ask you some questions about it. How would you describe yourself as a boxing fan? Casual boxing fan, hardcore boxing fan, somewhere in the middle?
I guess you could say casual boxing fan. So I'll watch some of the bigger fights, and like I don't know every undercard and right. Stuff like that. So some of the bigger fights I'll.
But you knew who Tank Davis was heading into this fight.
Yes.
From where?
Yes, from you, actually. speaking to you, and I got most of my information from you, really. So.
That's a lot of people in the building. But we had Ryan Garcia. I saw you got a picture with Ryan Garcia.
Yes.
Did you say, hey, I'm from JOHNBOY, you know, Dan? I hope so.
Actually, I met his, because he was actually talking to Steven Jackson first.
Oh, yeah, yeah. All
we were in the, he got me in the VIP.
That's right.
He got me in the VIP. So we were in there just kind of like talking and stuff. And then I seen he was actually talking to Steven Jackson, the ex-basketball player, mm-hmm. has podcast with Matt Barnes. And he was so I couldn't really get his attention at first. But his dad,
there's that,
came around, mm-hmm. and I was like, hey, you know, and I told him. He's like, oh, yeah, I remember. Okay. So then he brought, you know, so then he's like, oh, tap him right here, whatever. And then I told him. And he was pretty cool about it.
Yeah, Ryan Garcia is the man. He was here at the JOHNBOY offices. Like, those are the two guys that...
He got booed at the Barclays.
Yeah, because that's a pro Tank Davis crowd. Yeah. you know, Tank Davis fans don't like Ryan Garcia fans. Right. Ryan Garcia fans don't like Tank Davis fans. That's why they need to fight next.
Yeah.
That's the next fight, I think. We'll talk about that
on the
show.
I'd love to see that.
That's a fight that's a can't-miss fight. That's a fight that everyone in this office, and they are not boxing fans at this office, know who Ryan Garcia is, know who Gervonta Davis is. But we talk about that plenty in this episode with Rob Tebbit. But I want to talk about your experience. So you got the full VIP treatment from Showtime. There was a pre-fight party. Then you went to your seats. Tell us about the pre-fight party. What was the scene like in there? I know there are a lot of fans listening to this and watching this that want to go to these parties. So please tell us.
So it was at first, you know, I was a little worried because I'm like, oh, should I get there? I want to get there earlier. We got there a little later than what I wanted to, but there was, you know, it still was kind of empty.
Yeah, the undercard was putrid.
Right.
Bad undercard for this one.
Right. So there wasn't anybody really there. And I was like, okay, well, whatever. And then people started coming in, you know, and then it's like.
Where was it? Inside the Barclays, right?
Inside the Barclays, you know, it's like at the floor level before you walk to the floor.
Okay.
Then I seen some other people as well. I seen, Danny Garcia.
And his
dad. I seen him, and I took a picture with him, and he was dope. And I'm like, oh, shit, let's go, Swift. So I'll see him there, and, you know, we're wondering when his
Cat
next
Williams?
Fight is.
I'm bearing
Cat
the lead
Williams,
here.
Yes. Cat, that was, like, for me, it was like, oh, man, I met one of the kings of comedy.
Madonna was there. Did you meet Madonna?
I seen Madonna, because I actually, you know what's funny? I had walked toward the floor, and then I seen her coming out. And I said, oh, hey, Madonna? And she kind
of
like waved.
Wow.
So she was like, and then she just kept it moving. But you know, it's Madonna.
Okay, so once you got in the fight, I mean, were you impressed with the fact that, first of all these athletes are turning up, all these rappers are turning up, Madonna's turning up. That's the fight. That's the type of crowd, or that's the type of attraction that Tank Davis has become. And then the highest grossing fight in the history of Barclays Center. They keep in mind they put on 40 events in their 10-year history. I was at the first one. This one blew them all away in terms of how much this fight generated. You know, sellout over, I think it's $5.5 million in live gate.
Mm-hmm.
The fight as itself kind of played out a little slow. I know you have your videos on Twitter. Go check them out.
Yes.
You know, but tell us how, from your vantage point, what you saw in the fight and what it was like when that knockout came in the arena.
Well, and you know, and I know you probably. When I first got into my seats, it was like at the Lara fight.
Yep, yep.
And I was watching that, and I got to my seats. I'm like, okay, this is a cool view, and it's probably the closest that I've sat at a boxing event. And I was, and then they started. You know, they were coming out. We actually sat where the boxers actually walk through.
Where they make the ring walk.
It
I love
was
that.
Right there.
Those are good seats.
So pretty cool seats. We seen him coming in. Rolly came in and he was just like, "Yeah, I'm ready." You know, like I'm like, "Okay, I guess." And at first, it felt like a pro tank crowd, but it did feel like people wanted to see Rolly kind of pull something off. And at first, in the beginning, it felt like they were feeling each other out.
They were.
And it felt like Rolly was winning a lot of the rounds. I mean, I don't know how you had it.
He was winning the rounds because Tank wasn't letting his hands go. So Rolly might have been doing just a little bit more. Maybe Rolly won two, maybe three of the first five rounds before the sixth game and when he ultimately got stopped. But that's the kind of Tank Davis is. He's a slow starter.
Mm-hmm.
He waits you out. But then from what I was watching and from what the broadcasters were saying, like there was a lot of tension in the crowd.
Because
it's two punchers going up against each other. So it was almost like quiet in there.
It was.
And just waiting for that bomb to be detonated, and it did via Tank's left hand. What was that like when he landed that? It kind of came out of nowhere, but then it was just like, that's what boxing is. It's like all this build up to the main event. We get the fight, and then it could end in a second. And then you're like, what? What just happened?
You know, the friend of mine that I went with, you know, he's like really into boxing, always to a lot of events. And he was, you know, I think it was in the fourth round where it was like he was sitting down and Tank was sitting down and he was like kind of like smiling at the crowd, like looking around. I think they had showed his mom and then he was like looking around. And then everybody was, he was telling me, he's like, I don't know, man. Tank doesn't look like he's focused. He looks like he's like, I'm like, really? I think he's like, he feels like he has him right where he wants him a little bit.
Lulled him to sleep.
Bro, And I just wanted one more round.
Yeah.
Well, you know why.
Because the parlay would have hit. I had Tank 7 through 12. I had Lara 1 through 6. So both of them came. The Lara knockout came in the 8th, and then the Tank knockout came in the 6th. But good experience, right? Fun experience.
It was awesome. Yeah. The funny thing is just that he had him kind of like on the ropes. And then all you see is a real quick left that boom. It's like, whoa. Yep.
Rolly came running in. Like people thought was going to happen. He came in wide, and Tank made him pay for it. Tank's one of the biggest power in the lightweight division for sure. Being a casual fan, what are some fights that you want to see in the horizon?
Well, I definitely want to see Ryan Garcia.
Yeah.
And I want to see Tank fight. I don't know where that fight would be. I don't know if it would be in Barclays or if it would be in Vegas.
Probably either Vegas or LA is my guess.
Okay.
I mean, that's a long ways away. Like, getting them to get in the ring, it's been taking forever.
Well, it's funny because in the post-fight press conference, Tank was like, I think if you get knocked out like that, you don't deserve. I mean, that was funny. I love watching what he was saying.
Yeah, because Rolly wants a rematch. He's crazy. He said he won every round. He's not going to get a rematch. But I agree. Ryan Garcia Tank is a big fight. How about heavyweight division? Who do you like in the heavyweight division?
I don't really know anybody now.
You like Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder?
Well, you told me, probably like Deontay Wilder is probably like trying to sail off a little bit.
Well, you said he wants to come back.
He wants to come back.
Yeah, I don't know. He's not going to fight Fury again because they already had their trilogy. But there's a lot of Glock going on.
I like seeing Fury fight. I like seeing Fury fight.
Yeah. Canelo was in the
I want to see some Canelo. What's going on with what's going on with Danny Garcia?
Danny Garcia hasn't fought since December 2020 when he fought.
Is he like done?
He's made a lot of money in his career. He was one of a guy that fought the Barclays the most. I think he has like 6 or 7 main events. He made a boatload of money. He's fought every big name. He's fought every welterweight outside of Terrence Crawford. He might go to 154. He might go up a weight class. He's talked about that. But yeah, Danny Garcia, a guy that spent a lot of time at welterweight. And now he's looking for. He made a boatload of money. Like
I did see a couple.
30 million, probably.
I did see a couple of boxers there. Some of them I knew their name, and then my friend actually told me, this guy, he's like another guy that's about to come up. Let me see if I can show you him real quick. Him.
Demetrius Andrade.
Yes. So
Boo Boo Andrade, one of the most avoided fighters in boxing. That's the guy that Canelo said, get the fuck out of here, man.
Okay.
Payday. That he's taking a hit because he crashed Canelo's presser because he's been chasing Canelo for like 3 years.
And him.
What's his name? J-Rock.
He said he got a fight coming up, right?
Yeah, he does. He got knocked out by Charlo.
Okay.
A few years back. But that's what's going on, man.
Yeah.
We got to get you to a Vegas fight.
Oh, man.
I want to bring everyone. I want to bring Jimmy, Jake, John Boy. I want to bring them all to a Vegas fight and show them like how it really is because when you go to a Vegas fight, it's like 4 days. It's like an experience, Radio Row. You got, the weigh-in is an event, and then there's just so much content, and just like it's a full. It's like a festival.
Yeah.
It's like a Super Bowl.
It did feel like a whole event. It felt like a whole fashion party.
Yeah, exactly.
Event.
Yeah.
It felt like hey, the who's who is here.
Yep.
It felt like you wanted to be in that building that night.
Mm-hmm. That's what it is. It's a Super Bowl.
It's awesome.
Just like. Individual Super Bowls, and there are some big ones coming up. Joe's, thank you for your time. Joe's goes to Barclays Center, a raging success. We made another boxing fan here.
Yes.
At John Boy.
Good job. Thank you.
Let's bring in our guest this week, Rob Tebbit, longtime boxing journalist, pound for pound, best follow on boxing Twitter, dad race winner, English breakfast connoisseur. There's probably so many more late night boxing, early morning boxing enjoyer. I think I summed them all up, right, Rob?
I think that's about right. Although you're paying it fast and loose with the word enjoyer of the late nights and early mornings, because it's not always that enjoyable, Dan, believe it or not. But no, thanks very much for having me. Always good to catch up with you. Good to see you doing so well over at John Boy.
Thank you. Appreciate that. What's the time difference between UK and Australia? What time are we getting up to watch Kambosos Haney?
I think it's like 13 hours ahead. But I'm correct in saying that Top Rank of are going to align for a US favorable US slot. So I think My fear is that it's going to still be quite late for America, which means it's going to be like 7, 8 a.m. over here, I think.
I read somewhere it's starting, I think it's beginning at 7 p.m. Eastern, which is really early for U.S. time. But I've also read that there's not going to be a where they're going to go up against each other. Like Haney Cambosos is not going to go up against Fulton Roman. It's not the same as like a Taylor Serrano and Shakur Stevenson Valdez, but you know, it's still good for fans, but we'll touch on that in a little bit. Let's talk about what we saw this past weekend. Gervonta Davis moves the needle like no other in boxing right now. One of the best ticket sellers, one of the best stars, one of the best punchers. So therefore, when he fights, there is a lot to talk about afterwards. First, let's go to the fight. A meticulous, a very monotonous pace was set between these two fighters. Gervonta Davis threw 15 punches around. Rolly Romero wasn't, burning it up either. He was under 20 as well. Gervonta Davis lands 25 punches in a round, but it's that 25th punch, Rob. It's one that all that matters, that left hook that flattened Rolly Romero. You kind of washes away what was not the best, most aesthetically pleasing fight, but fans walk away at either at Barclays or watching at home with another highlight reel knockout for Tank Davis.
Yeah, and you make a good point there. That's what people ultimately remember. People won't remember the 5.5 rounds or so that that elapsed before the knockout, or almost 6 rounds before the knockout. I felt like it was always coming. I mean, I kind of, like everybody does, you kind of get caught up in the fight week hyperbole and the hype and what have you. Rolly is what he is. He's very entertaining, both in the ring and outside of the ring, whether he's your cup of tea or not. But if you look at what he does in the ring, lunging in on that front foot, way over the front foot, telegraphing his shots, it was a matter of time before Davis walked him into a shot. His movement in the first couple of rounds, Davis, I thought, was very good. He was able to control the real estate without really having to do too much. I think Rolly won a couple of rounds, maybe 2 or 3 rounds, depending on how you like it. But he was never in any danger of winning the fight. Davis in the 5th round started to let his hands go a little bit more, bringing that left hand into play down the pipe. And then the 6th round, it happened. And it's kind of what everybody expected to happen. Rolly coming in through one big telegraph right hand. Davis caught it. And then the 2nd one was exactly the same shot. Crossed his feet, chin that came up in the air, and that was all she wrote. So, look, I mean, It's not going to go down as a great fight. I don't think anybody there's ever any danger of that. But yeah, people will remember the highlight reel knockout. Davis didn't waste any shots throughout. I felt like he knew that it was just a matter of time, and so it proved to be. So yeah, unfortunately, I feel like we do say this after quite a few Davis fights. We didn't really learn an awful lot more about Gervonta Davis than we already knew beforehand. But you know, he did his job and he did it in spectacular fashion. Admittedly, it took 5.5 rounds to get there, but still. I was very impressed with the finish, and to be fair, the way in which he controlled the fight up to that without ever really having to do too much. I felt like he was in control of the fight the whole time.
Yeah, that pressure without throwing punches is something that only a handful of fighters can do. It's very risky. You know, I've been saying this for a while now. It's that Canelo style. You're walking a tightrope, essentially. Deontay Wilder did it to a lesser degree. Jermell Charlo does it. It's low volume. It's high accuracy. It's game-changing power. But if you are not letting your hands go, if you're not able to find your opponent, if the power shots aren't landing, not saying that's the case for Gervonta, you will lose rounds off of sheer inactivity. Gervonta Davis lost rounds early in that fight, not because he was being outboxed, because he simply wasn't throwing punches. I mean, that's fine if you believe that you can catch your opponent. Will it be the case if he fights a Devin Haney, or will be the case of George Cambosos, or he faces an upper echelon type of fighter in the lightweight division? That remains to be seen. I think that goes to your point of we did not learn a lot about Gervonta Davis besides that he has game-changing power. Not everyone in the lightweight division has that one knockout power. Will he be able to find those opponents? I'll throw in a Shakur Stevenson as well. That's the main question for me, and I know it's perceived as hate, but it surely is not. We are analysts. We break down fights. We want to see what's next. We always go to what's next. So in my mind, I'm like, all right, can Gervonta Davis fight like this? 15 punches around, even against, Barrios, it was 17 punches around to the first 4 rounds. He is not a volume puncher, but he can knock your lights out. Can he fight like this, Rob, against top talent in the lightweight division?
Well, that's the big question. And just to go back on what you've said there, I mean, I feel like Javonte has become one of the most difficult fighters to discuss, certainly in our,
it's like kind walking of, through landmines.
Yeah, in our little bubble of boxing Twitter, especially. Look, I'm unashamedly a massive Javonte Davis fan. For all of his shortcomings that people look at with regards to the matching, I'm a massive fan of his. And the fact that I want to see him in with Shakur Stevenson, with Ryan Garcia, with Devin Haney, Teofimo Lopez, all those guys, is a compliment, in my opinion, to his ability. Like, you can't question the way in which they've built him into a huge attraction. It's commendable. It's fantastic. But me, as the pure boxing fan, I really want to see him tested against those guys. And I don't know, Dan. I don't know if there's any guys out there that I would hand on heart definitely pick to beat him. I think he's a very special talent. I think a lot of trainers and people who I come into contact with all say the same thing about Davis. He's a very, very talented guy. And, you know, they're people who have got a much keener eye for the sport than I have. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like similarly to Canelo, he's sort of mastered the art of just being comfortable in the ring. You never really see Davis rushed. I think the closest we saw to that was probably the Isak Cruz fight. But he always seems to make time for himself, and he knows just when to turn it up. I mean, he said in the post-fight press conference at the weekend that somebody was shouting from the crowd, you know, step to him now. And he was saying, no, not yet.
I think it was Ryan Garcia.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. But yeah, he's developed that kind of sense of knowing when to put the foot down. The Barrios fight, obviously, up at 140 for the first time. I think part of that would have been him testing the waters and just having a look for those first early rounds. I think with Rowley, he just knew that there would come a time where he would cross his legs, keep his chin up in the air, and he would take him out. And that's what we saw. But yeah, I mean, I would love him to box. There's probably 10 names, I reckon, that I would like to see Davis box. But I mentioned this on Twitter, and I know that you're a big fan of the fight as well. If it can be made, there's something about that Javonte Davis, Ryan Garcia blend that just really does it for me. It really, like when Ryan went on hot boxing with Mike Tyson, and that 2-week window where they were talking about it before Ryan went on and started talking about Pacquiao and this and that, that was brilliant. Like, it was intoxicating, the whole timeline, and everybody in boxing was talking about that. You've got two really charismatic, sellable, marketable characters who can fight, who can sell fights and to a wider audience. That to me is a really, really big fight. But look, I think Davis is a wonderful talent. We just need to see him. I mean, he's speaking about wanting to get the winner of Haney versus Camboso, so I would make him a favorite against whoever wins that fight. But I would just like to see them now. Yeah,
it's tough. It's tough. It's like a discussion. It's like getting to a point where it's the same discussion almost every time about Davis, at least to rational boxing minds. And I agree with you to with some of the points that you made. It's like, I want to place Javonte Davis in the top. I don't make pound for pound list, but if I did, I want to place him in that list. I want to have him. I want to erase this. If because I believe he is one of the best fighters in boxing today. But how do we properly gauge fighters? It's the only way we can, is them inside the ring with other top talent. I believe Javonte Davis wants these fights. I believe every fighter wants to test themselves against the very best. But we, as we know, as you follow this sport, there are politics involved, you know, whether it's Leonard Ellerbe and Floyd Mayweather admitting it out loud that we're going to keep it in-house. The in-house options are running out. I don't want to see an Isak Cruz rematch. I don't want to see a Michael Rivera. I would maybe kind of, but that's not what I want to see next. I want to see the big names. He's not going to get Haney Camboso. So they're going to be tied up for at least the next year. You take a look around at the picture, and not many options at PBC. The fight is Ryan Garcia. I know I've been saying the same thing. It's a lot of fans agree that they want to see it. I had Steven Espinosa on the show last week, and he painted a pretty grim picture. They don't want to work with DAZN. They don't believe DAZN offers anything, even despite DAZN offering pay-per-view now. You know, it doesn't make sense as a joint pay-per-view. I don't know. Maybe it does. The gate I could see the gate going anywhere between 8 and 10 million. That's nothing. That's not nothing. You know, it's something, but you're right. This is the fight, that could transcend the sport. You know, I work at John Boy Media. It is a baseball company, full of young kids. They know who Javonte Davis is, and they know who Ryan Garcia is. When he came, Ryan Garcia came through the office, they were excited. They knew exactly who he was. I didn't have to give a big intro. Hey, this is Ryan Garcia. He's a professional boxer. They knew exactly who he was. They knew Tank. When I went into work yesterday, everyone saw the knockout, whether it was on social media or they ordered the fight. Those two need to fight. With everyone else in the lightweight division all tied up, I mean, it makes sense. It makes sense, Rob. So much that it makes so much sense that it probably won't happen.
Yeah, it certainly does. And just to touch on what you've said there about Stephen Espinosa, look, if I'm Stephen Espinosa and I'm in his position, and it's important to point out here as well that, you know, while we're seeing Devin Haney this weekend against George Kambosos, you know, criticisms can be leveled at various other fighters in and around between 130 and 147 about, you know, not everybody's always fighting the top
guys. Yeah, I agree.
Get that. And yeah, if I'm Stephen Espinosa, I probably feel the same way, to be honest. I personally don't see that fight. I mean, if you look at the fights that have been big enough to make those crossover or those joint pay-per-views, you've got Holyfield versus Holyfield, you've got Lewis versus Tyson, you've got Mayweather versus Pacquiao, you've got Wilder Fury 2, and I think the third as well. I don't see it really being in that bracket. And if you're Javonte Davis and you know, you've sold pay-per-views, I don't know how much you've sold, you've still done it, you've carried pay-per-views, and Ryan Garcia has yet to do that, you can see why they... I mean, I'm sure they could do a deal, but it would have to be a deal that's favored in Javonte Davis, the proven kind of pay-per-view commodity and entities in his favor. So whether or not a deal can be done on those terms, I agree with you, probably not. But it is the fight that I would very much like to see. And it probably has less of the promotional red tape, maybe only fractionally, than some of the other fights that can be made at 135. So
yeah, I think, Rob, the only thing it comes down to is whether... Javonte Davis straight up leaves Showtime, leaves Mayweather, leaves PBC behind. I don't see that happening. Maybe he'll erase Mayweather Promotions from the equation, and then he, you know, just inserts his promotional company, sticks with Al Haymon, stays on Showtime. They are investing in Javonte Davis Showtime. That's one thing Espinosa did tell me. They will throw him a massive bag for him to stay on Showtime. That is the only way I could see this happening, is if it goes, it has to be on one platform. And DAZN's new deal with Golden Boy pretty much puts out the close where they're going to allow their marquee fighter, who is Ryan Garcia, take a look at the Golden Boy roster and what's going on with DAZN, especially over here in the U.S. He is one of their marquee guys. He is not fighting on Showtime exclusively. They're going to try to get a piece of that, but it remains to be seen how that will all shake out. Before we go on to the big fights this weekend, putting a bow on the Javonte Davis conversation, Rob, Javonte Davis should fight blank next. I think I know your answer, but he will fight blank next.
Yeah, I mean, he should fight Ryan Garcia on Showtime pay-per-view. Sorry, Oscar.
We don't have a dog in the race. I don't care where it ends. I just want to watch it.
And then... who will he fight? It's tough, isn't it? It's really difficult. I mean, you could say like sort of Isak Cruz or Michelle Rivera,
right?
But
that's my guess. Is Michelle Rivera or whoever you not pronounce this guy's name? Is it Michelle? Is it Michael? The Ali lookalike or Isak Cruz too? I mean, who else? What are the other options out there?
There's not an awful lot. Obviously, we've just seen Chris Colbert get beat. That could have potentially been something that they made with him moving up to 135. Yeah, I think it's got to be one of those two, really. Isak Cruz, Michelle Rivera. Could we see him jump up to welterweight? I don't know. Do something crazy and go fight Keith Thurman. Who knows?
One thing I will say is that Sean Porter sparred with Javonte Davis and said he has massive power. He said this guy could fight at 147 if he was matched properly, and PBC has shown that they will do some outside of the box things, whether it's put a pay-per-view between two guys coming off a loss, or, you know, have guys jumping up multiple divisions. And that's something I think Thurman would go for, because I don't think he has any interest in boots. I don't think he has any interest in a Conor Benn. I don't think he only has interest in big U.S. fights, and a Javonte Davis Thurman fight, whether, you know, albeit very unlikely, is I'll give it like a 30% chance.
Well, okay, how about Javonte Davis versus Adrian Broner at 154?
Oh, that would be amazing. Take my money. Literally take my money, and just, it would be a fight where they would throw maybe, you know, 15 punches total per round. But to see Broner to finally get knocked out, you've never been knocked out in a fight, been knocked down plenty. I mean, that would be interesting. Yeah, it's like the main takeaway is that there isn't a lot of options for Javonte Davis on if he stays status quo with his promotional outfit and all that. But it's intriguing. Lightweight division, I feel like It's been moving at a very slow pace, but now it's going to start to pick up this weekend. Australia, Down Under, the big one. I'm very excited for this fight. I know you are as well. George Kambosos, Devin Haney, let's go. I mean, I've been watching a lot of these clips, whether it's Kambosos and his tactical, they're not even calling it trash talk, Rob. They're calling it like tactical mind games, whether he's calling him an informant, calling him a rat, giving his whole speeches. Devin Haney on his side, not having his father, not having Ben Davison, you know, taking this perceived pay cut, leaving his promoter. There are storylines galore, but I do think this will be a very tactical fight inside of the ring. What is your excitement level for this undisputed lightweight championship fight?
Yeah, I mean, I'm very, very excited by it. I think there's questions on both sides for me with both George Kambosos and Devin Haney. You mentioned there about Devin Haney's training setup, the fact that he had to leave America late. This is not traveling to the East Coast. This isn't traveling to the UK even. This is a long way away. And you're not going, you are very much going into enemy territory. When, like, I'm an Englishman. The English and the Aussies over the years, we've had our sporting duels, and you know, there's a lot of history between the two countries. If you go over to Australia and you are the B side, or you're the visiting team, they don't like you very much. It's going to be a very, very raucous atmosphere. Kambosos has done a very good job. Look, I mean, a lot of people are kind of sick of him, I guess. So you see on the timeline, people are a little bit tired of his cheese and what
have
you.
It's weird. But it's funny. It's like completely switched. He's like gone during the Teofimo. It was like, all right, this guy is fresh. He's getting on the Teofimo's skin, but now he's kind of morphed somewhat into Teofimo Lopez.
Yeah, he's really gone at it. Look, I think it's still great for the sport. I'd much rather see somebody kind of go too far than not go far enough. Sure. It is boxing after all. But the one thing is that the Aussies will love that. The Aussies will be bang up behind him. They're very aggressive, very kind of sort of take you head on. That's kind of the Australian sporting mantra. And it's going to be a hard fight for Devin Haney. I feel like if it was even in neutral territory, I still feel that we've not, you know, Devin, I think, is a very good all-round fighter. I don't think there's anything that he does exceptionally well. I think he gets hit a little too much for somebody who's kind of renowned as a defensively astute master boxer. And Kambosos is going to be absolutely firing on all cylinders. He's going to have the support behind him. He's going to be riding the crest of the wave after the Teofimo Lopez fight. But there is the question of how good is he? His wins over Lee Selby, who's a blown-up featherweight, not at his best weight at all at lightweight. Teofimo Lopez, by all accounts, you know, wasn't, let's say, living the best life in the build-up to that fight. How good is Kambosos? Was it just his night? Every fighter gets one. Will Devin Haney go over there and just kind of get behind the jab, settle into a rhythm and make it an easy fight? I feel like Haney in the first three or four rounds will look very sharp, and then it's what happens after that. Because I feel like Kambosos will be looking over at him and thinking, you're going to be good for three or four rounds, and then after that, and I get hold of you, I'm going to go to work. And I feel like Kambosos, riding on the crest of that momentum, that Spartan warrior mentality, like Teofimo Lopez wasn't at his best, should we say, but Kambosos had to walk through fire to win that fight. He had to take a lot of big shots early. He got dropped late in the fight. He carried on. He come back and he won the last two rounds and finished strong. He's going to feel like he's invincible. He's going to have the home crowd behind him. And yeah, Devin, when it gets hard in those 6, 7, 8 rounds, that I know he debuted when he was in Mexico when he was young. This is different. You're going in with a guy when you're 16 years old in Mexico, you're supposed to be. I mean, I'm sure
200 people in those. Are you talking about? Yeah. There's 200 people in those smokers in those fights.
There's 50,000 Australians here. Yeah. They all want to see you get knocked out. So, look, I think Haney has always shown a very good head on his shoulders. He's always been very mature in the times that I've spoken to him. I know you would have spoken to him numerous times over the years. He's always come across as a very level-headed, kind of unfazed character. But you take away Bill Haney out of the corner, you take Ben Davison away. Of course, he's no longer working with Mickey Bay. Mickey Bay's not gone out. It's Yoel Judah, who I know is obviously very close to him personally, but I'm not sure that Yoel has ever cornered him in a fight or certainly been the lead trainer in a fight. I know Devin would work with Manny Robles and work with other trainers in the past. Mm-hmm. I think that's potentially something that's I wouldn't say a positive, but the fact that he's used to kind of having...
Right. He's used to having a lot of different voices. You know, whether it's bringing in a Ben Davison, Mike McCallum came in to help work on body work. They have a lot of voices, but not having your dad there is a big, big time disadvantage for him, whether it's just from a mental standpoint. You know, he's across the world. I know where these guys, they think they're robots, but they are human beings. You know, not having your dad there from a just a personal aspect is a big thing, given how close they are. Not having him in his corner is massive for why we'll be watching, and what we care about is the actual fight. Same thing with not having Ben Davis in there. You know, going to Yoel Judah, who has been in some big fights, but they are a long time ago. I mean, and you said not 50,000 people, and going back to the 50,000, you know, I see this working two ways. You know, is Kambosos has never fought in front of a crowd like this. He's barely ever, he has his last, I think his last Australian fight was like 2018 or even, maybe even before that. It's who is going to use that crowd to their advantage? Is Kambosos going to feel the moment? Is it going to be too much for him? Is he going to want to go out there and take it to Haney? If he does take it to Haney, Rob, I feel like that kind of feeds right into what Haney wants. I feel like Haney's a great counterpuncher. You know, he is does get hit, but he is defensively sound for the most part. Has a really good jab. He can negate a lot of Kambosos's aggression in this fight. And Kambosos is the more aggressive fighter. He throws against Teofimo, he threw something like 60 punches per round. That's pretty good pace for a lightweight. Haney is well below that. Haney's in the low 40s. We know the type of style Haney's gonna fight. He's gonna go in there and look to jab. He's gonna go in there and look to pick his shots. But if it comes down to it, and you know, going back to your point, the second half of this fight, if it comes down to it where Haney has to step on the gas pedal, you know, Haney's got to win the last two out of three rounds or the last three out of four rounds. Well, does he have enough offense? That's the question for me. I mean, I know that Kambosos, that one thing jumps off the page for either guy, really. But I believe when push comes to shove, Kambosos can find something offensively that maybe Haney can't in the later rounds. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do agree. And I also feel like the rounds are going to be close as well, because I think it's quite obvious to see what we're going to see from both fighters. As you mentioned there, we're going to see Haney try and get behind the jab, try and set it into a rhythm. Kambosos is going to try and apply the pressure. But if Devin needs to win those early rounds convincingly, in my opinion, I think he needs to win those rounds, rubber stamp those rounds. If he can, you know, land a sharp right hand. He's not we all know that Devin's not, you know, he's not Gervonta Davis. He's not known as a massive puncher, but he's a sharp puncher. He's got good timing, good shot selection. If he can make an impression on Kambosos early and just try and slow the momentum and don't let him walk you down. I felt like Haney against Jojo Diaz, who's obviously a very good fighter, but naturally smaller, for the first three or four rounds looked nice and good, kept the long jab, but after that was giving up too much ground. I don't feel like he can give up too much ground against George Kambosos. One of the things as well that I'm intrigued by is the weight as well. We've heard about Devin having to move up. I mean, he first told me about moving up 2.5 years ago. Right. He is a big boy for lightweight. He's got always say to people, he's got a tiny waist and a big head, which means that he's just, he's boiled himself down. Look, he lives the life. You know, he does it properly. He's never.
You see all his food pics on Instagram?
Yeah, he's always in good nick. You never see him like we've seen Broner in the past or Davison.
Right, doesn't blow up in between fights.
No. But doing the weight in a foreign country, and again, it's not Europe or Canada or Mexico you're going to here. We've seen fighters who have traveled and they're in unfamiliar surroundings are not able to get access to, look, we all know about it, saunas, hot baths, things like that, the way you're able to make the weight properly. Where you've grown accustomed to doing these things for however many years in America, you may not be able to do the same things in Australia. And this happens at the top level. I'm not going to name any names, but I know it happened with a British fighter who challenged for a world title in 2021. And he had to take off an extraordinary amount of weight the day before the weigh-in. Whereas if he was in the UK, he wouldn't have had to do that. And that was because it's unfamiliar surroundings. And, you know, the Aussies ain't going to make it easy for him.
No, I mean, take a look at it already, Rob. There's so much is stacked against Haney right now. I know there's like this conspiracy theory, like this gamesmanship with not letting Bill Haney in. No. These are strict laws that have been in place for a very long time. There are many notable celebrities, athletes all over the world that cannot enter Australia. But there is a lot stacked against Haney. Just the fact that he's fighting overseas, the fact that he wins, he's got to fight again against George Kambosos. The fact that we've seen a lot of, I'm going to use the word that I don't really throw around too often, robberies. We've seen Jeff Horn get a decision over Pacquiao. I hope you're not a Jeff Horn truther, but we've seen it. I mean, you got to go in there and you have to win decisive rounds. I agree with you. You have to win decisive rounds. And can Haney win decisive rounds? He's a guy that's never really done anything decisively over his last like four or five fights when he's beefed up the competition. Man, I would go into this thinking Haney's going to win, but after this conversation, You know, I'm thinking about putting a few dollars on Kambosos, who is the underdog as of right now on DraftKings. He is plus 140. I know you're a betting man, Rob. Are you going to throw some money on this? Taking a look at these lines, it's crazy to see Kambosos as the underdog.
Yeah, I'll be betting Kambosos. I think on paper, this isn't my way of kind of trying to back out of making a pick. On paper, Haney probably should win the fight, but fights aren't fought on paper. Right. And it's all of these intangibles. And look, I try not to judge a fight on that or predict a fight on that. Try and just look at what we've seen from them in the ring. But even like what we've seen from them in the ring implies a closer fight than I think what we're seeing at the bookies. And then also you take in those other outdoor factors or those outside factors about not having the training camp in there and the training team in there, being in Australia. You know, I think it's a 50-50 fight. And because I think it's a 50-50 fight or a 55-45 fight either way, and you look at the bookies, you know, you bet against the house. And I feel like they're being quite generous on Kambosos. I think what you said there is right. We've not seen like Haney against Diaz. Like Diaz is a good fighter, but he's not a lightweight. Mm-hmm. And he had his moments in that fight. And he had his moments where he looked like he got a reaction out of Haney. And again, Kambosos is not a murderous puncher, but he's a natural lightweight. He's going to be full of confidence. And he's going to be looking at Haney and thinking that he can get to him in the second half of the fight. So, yeah, Linares had his moments late in the fight. Haney wasn't able to stop Linares, didn't really hurt Linares at all in the fight. I think the fight goes long. I can't really see a stoppage either way, I have to say. And if it goes long and Kambosos wins, let's say Haney wins four of the first six rounds and Kambosos wins three of the last six, and you're kind of 7-5 Haney each way. But if Kambosos closes strong, which I would fully expect him to do under the circumstances, it's going to be close on the cards. And if it's close on the cards and you've got 50,000 people cheering for one guy, whenever he's hitting gloves and missing and nobody doing anything when Haney's landing, that's why he needs to put clear distance between him and Kambosos in those rounds, both literally and figuratively.
Yeah, I agree.
That distance.
Plus 1600 for the draw.
Not a bad shout at all.
Not considering a bad shout. Not a bad shout at all. All right, let's get over to Fulton and Roman. It is a big fight in the bantamweight division. Or excuse me, super bantam. 122. I get mixed up with those smaller weights. But Fulton, this is a big fight. Now, Daniel Roman, a former unified champion. Fulton is a guy that I saw, we've been tracking for years, and he was a modest puncher, you know, a modest work rate. 14 of 50 for his six fights before he fought Angelo Leo. And then against Angelo Leo, he steps it up and he throws 30 of 100, Rob. He goes from a guy that was throwing 50 punches around to 100 punches around. We saw what he did against Figueroa. He's turned himself into a volume puncher, and that's how you have to win at these lower weights. Daniel Roman, also a volume puncher, 70 punches around, has the acumen, a little long in the tooth, especially for that weight class, 32 years old. Roman, been in some big fights. I just see this one playing out, and Stephen Fulton is a name that could arrive on some pound-for-pound list too, should he be victorious.
Yeah, I think there's almost no way that that's not going to be a great fight. I can't really see how that fight doesn't perform. I think Danny Roman, you mentioned there, he's boxed at the top level for a long time. He's been in some great fights. The fight with MJ Akhmadaliev was very, very close. Some people felt that Danny Roman should have got the nod in that fight. Fulton, his last fight against Brandon Figueroa, was a very close fight. A lot of people felt that Brandon Figueroa maybe could have got the decision there. Figueroa, obviously massive at the weight, throws a lot of punches, was able to kind of impose himself physically on Stephen Fulton in the second half of the fight. But Fulton kind of doing what he does, catching and countering and finding these little shots on the inside, I think ultimately edged it for him. And I expect a similar pattern of the fight against Danny Roman. I expect Danny Roman to come forward and try and apply the pressure. And I feel like Fulton, while I agree with against Angelo Leo, when he was throwing a lot of punches, he looked sensational in that fight. He kind of did everything, front foot, back foot, counter punching, leading. He did
great
a bit of
pushing.
But I think against Figueroa and against Roman this weekend, we're going to see more of that catch and counter, trying to break him up on the inside and try and land those clean, effective punches. But yeah, I think Fulton's a great fighter. He's my style of fighter, that, you know, shoulder roll, catch and counter on the inside. He's my type of fighter. But yeah, I can't see anything other than a great fight. I think Fulton will win a close decision in a really, really good fight. But yeah, Danny Roman can really bring it. It wouldn't surprise me massively if Roman's able to get the win.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with what you said there. Like Fulton has seen this pressure style before in Figueroa. I think that bodes well for him. Roman brings it. Except, like I said, 70 punches around. Figueroa is like 90 punches around. So Fulton probably made a decision that I can't live with 50 around. I don't have game-changing power, so I got to up the volume. And Fulton's a guy, if he wins this fight, you know, if Canelo Alvarez, you know, didn't go on that run last year. And if Fulton, you know, wins this fight here with Romam, we're talking about a three-fight stretch of beating an Angelo Leo, beating a Figueroa, beating a Daniel Roman. I know he wants Akpadalia. I mean, these are big fights for Stephen Fulton. All these lower weights don't get a ton of attention. This fight is getting a little bit swallowed up by George Kambosos, Devin Haney, and the Gervonta Davis talk and some of the bigger fights we're seeing down the road. But it's still a big fight. It's still a fun fight. It's a purist type of fight. It's going to be on Showtime. I like this fight. And maybe Fulton, if he doesn't get Akpadalia, which is going to be a tough fight to make. We just talked about how, you know, these DAZN fighters aren't appearing on Showtime and vice versa. I know Fulton wants that fight. If he should he be victorious against Roman, he wants that unification bout. But maybe he jumps up. You know, maybe he goes up. Or maybe, you know, a fight with Inoue could happen with Fulton. There's a lot going on these lower weights, and it's something to keep an eye on. Before we let you go, Rob, I want to talk about Anthony Joshua, trainer change. He's now brought in Robert Garcia. I've talked about this at length, you know, the jab first, almost to a fault of Anthony Joshua since the Klitschko fight. 70% of his thrown punches, Anthony Joshua, are jabs. Jab's a great tool to have in boxing, but it's clearly not working for Joshua as of late. What can Robert Garcia do? Do you think this is the right move? And do you think it makes a difference in the rematch with Usyk?
I think it's tough because, you know, you kind of think, okay, Joshua needs to be more aggressive. He needs to use more of his physical attributes and impose himself on Alexander Usyk. Let's get him an aggressive trainer. But you've mentioned there, and I know from watching your work and stuff that you've done in the past, of Anthony Joshua's kind of psychological switch post-Vladimir Klitschko, where he became more of a jab fighter. To have that kind of creep into your game, but to mold yourself and, you know, fighters develop certainly heavyweights over the years, particularly on the back of losses or fights and where they get hurt, like the Klitschko fight. You know, they develop and they change over time. Implementing that and becoming, even against Kubrat Pulev and obviously the Andy Ruiz rematch and the first Usyk fight, he's become more of a boxer, more of a thinking fighter. To go from that to Robert Garcia, that's quite a change. The fight's going to be pushed back to kind of mid to late August. So he's got a little bit more time to work with him, but I can't imagine. And my thought has been the same, whether it was Robert Garcia, Virgil Hunter, Ronnie Shields, or whoever he went with.
Teddy Atlas was being floated around.
Teddy Atlas, yeah. Oh,
give me a break. Give me a break.
I just can't imagine making such a massive change and going into such a dangerous fight against such a skilled fighter. I think I would have liked to have seen Joshua box an Otto Wallin or somebody like that. A southpaw. Okay, he's not Usyk, but he's a southpaw. You can get used to it. He knows Otto Wallin. He boxed him in the amateurs. He had him around camp a few times just to work on certain things. I mean, Robert is an offensive fighter. He's a catch and counter on the inside, combination punches, Mexican style. We've never seen Anthony Joshua box like that. When people talk about Anthony Joshua being kind of a more aggressive fighter, that's fine. But he's always been an aggressive mid-range counterpuncher. He's never been go and let his hands go and just pulverize guys. He's always operated behind the jab, draw the lead, and then the big right hand or the big uppercut on the inside is where he gets his work done. So it's a risk, but, you know, it is obviously a risk that Anthony Joshua and his team have felt worth taking. But to go from Rob McCracken and the development or the kind of AJ 2.0 post Vladimir Klitschko to go to a very offensive minded coach in Robert Garcia, while on the surface of things may look like what we needed.
Maybe it'll be more of a blend, Rob.
But then
having a jab is good. You know, you have a great jab. That's a great thing in the heavyweight division. Vladimir Klitschko ruled the division with a jab for 10 years. But he had that followed it up with the right hand and he found the mark or willing to trade more. If Robert Garcia could take a look at it and say, all right, you have a really good jab, but, you know, where is that AJ that we saw before Klitschko? Albeit he was fighting, you know, these are the first 10, 15 fights of your career. And it's not like now where you're fighting, you know, top talent out of the gate. And these were guys that he was made to order. I mean, these are guys that he was taking out. So I'm interested to see if there can be that, if you can implement Robert Garcia, can implement more of a blending style where it's not so drastic, where it's not AJ, you know, throwing 70% jabs, maybe, you know, down to 55%, which is a more healthy balance.
Yeah, I might just be concerned on the fact, I mean, I don't really care. I don't have a horse in the race. But if I'm Anthony Joshua's team, my concern would be doing that and trying to make that blend 8 weeks out.
Against the pound for pound great.
Yeah, and this is not a regular fighter that you're in there with. And Alexander Usyk is going to know an awful lot more about Anthony Joshua, having fought him and fought him very well for 12 rounds back in London. So, yeah, my prediction on the fight hasn't changed. I felt Usyk would win the first fight. I think he'll win the second fight. I said to you on here that Alexander Usyk would win a decision.
A prediction piece.
So, yeah, I think on the surface of things, he needs to be more aggressive. He needs to utilize his physical attributes, but I don't know. I think Usyk gets the win again.
Intriguing times, my friend. Boxing is alive. I have a shirt that says that. Go buy it at johnboymedia.com. More than ever. I mean, we're getting big fights every week. Spence Crawford looks like it's almost done every weekend from here on out. Big fights. I love the sport. I know you do as well. Enjoyed this chat. Let's do it again soon. I hope that it's an easy watch for you on Saturday night with Haney and Kambosos. And yeah, man, I'm going to get you back on soon. I appreciate the time.
Absolutely. Thanks very much for having me as always, Dan. Keep up the good work and I look forward to catching up with you soon.